Spice up your life with me, Health Chef Julia, as I set out on the journey of what is healthy. In each episode, we'll explore the different meanings of healthy. For some, healthy means indulging in something decadent and delicious. For others, it's a mental health day and a good workout. There's more to health than just food. It's about living well, enjoying your life, and having fun. Haven't you heard? Redheads do it best. Come with me and we'll find out just what healthy is. Welcome to a new episode of What is Healthy podcast, where we share every hack to getting healthier and a more sustainable lifestyle. I'm Chef Julia, and today we'll be talking with Megan Stubbs. So nice to meet you via Zoom. Thank you so much for being on today's podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Do you mind introducing yourself to the audience?
Yeah, absolutely. My name's Dr. Megan Stubbs. I'm a sexologist. That's the job you didn't see on Career Day. So I serve most.
Right?
Yeah, I know, right? So I spend most of my time lecturing on college campuses or universities digitally now. I write a column in Playboy, and I have a new book coming out this spring.
Amazing. Congratulations.
Thank you.
How did you decide to get into this line of work and work in this field of sex? Because it's unfortunately still a taboo topic in some areas.
Yeah, absolutely. So it was always my destiny, I think. When I was younger, I was always that go-to friend you'd ask for sex tips or relationship advice. And that just continued on through high school and into college. I was pre-med, so I have my biology degree and I was going to go on to medical school, but I realized I can't do chemistry. There's something wrong. There's a disconnect. So I was like, oh crap, what am I going to do? How am I going to
get it? I can't bake, so I get it.
Yeah, I'm a great baker, but that's a different kind of chemistry than like medical needs. So I guess I am in chemistry now, chemistry of people.
Yeah.
So I went to one of the few graduate schools in the country at the time that offered graduate degrees in human sexuality. And so I got my degree.
Where was that?
In San Francisco. It's no longer open anymore. But yeah, it's been great. I came back home and now I help people with their sex lives, their relationships, how they feel about their body image, all sorts of stuff.
I love that so much. So the reason I started this podcast was because everybody has a different take on what healthy is. They, you know, it could be food, it could be sleep, it could be diet, it could be exercise, it could be sex. And I think that there's so many things coming at us at once via social media and podcasts and just like information overload of what healthy is. And then there's trends on what healthy is. And I just wanted to kind of jump past that and actually interview people in different fields and different lines of work and how they relate to healthy and like how what they think healthy is. So I start the podcast off by asking the guests, what is healthy for you?
Oh, that's such a broad question. Yeah,
it is, but like everyone has a different niche that they like focus the health in, I guess.
Healthy for me, especially in terms of my job, is you feeling good and empowered about the decisions you make regarding your sexuality, your lifestyle, and just the choices you make. So I know there's a lot of myths and misconceptions and stigma and tabooness around sexuality. And so I really want people to feel empowered to seek out accurate, honest information and then go forth and make decisions that they feel good about. Because I think sometimes we can get caught up in something that's like, you know, diet culture. We should look a certain way. You know, we should, you know, have to lose all this weight to be healthy. But what does that mean? What does healthy mean? Does that mean look like you people you see in glossy magazines? Or is it like I have a good, you know, idea about my body, like what's healthy for me? And what's healthy for me might look different than what's healthy for you. And so it's just people taking ownership and knowing that diversity in this realm, as well as many others, is totally normal. So just empowering them to like, just feel good about what they're doing. Yeah,
exactly. And I feel like they should feel good in all aspects, in the food that they put in their body, in their sexual experiences, and in their body image. And I just want to embrace that like everybody can be healthy and it's not just such like a daunting, you know, trigger word.
Yeah. And it's not a one size fits all. It's very, very different. And that's okay. It's good to say it's different because if you look at what your friend's doing, that might not be the thing for you, you know, so know that it's varied and that's okay.
So I'm just going to get right into all of the nitty gritty sex convos with you. Is there like an exercise or a move that you tell clients or talk about that they should be doing before or getting ready for to have intercourse or sex with someone?
Yeah, I really love to recommend touching yourself first. So whether that in prelude to having partnered sex, I think getting to know yourself first is so important. One, to know that you can bring about amazing, awesome pleasure, which you absolutely deserve on your own. You don't need to add someone else into it. So if you're, you know, single right now and you don't have that, you don't have to feel like you need to go seek it out or try to find someone to make you feel good. You can make yourself feel good. So first, permission to touch yourself. But then also from those, you know, benefits of touching yourself, you get to know what feels good for you. And so the more you know about what feels good for you, the better you can communicate that to a future partner.
I love that. I agree. People don't know their bodies. People don't know their mind. Like, they don't know how to control all aspects of their life. And like, I think control is the wrong word, but like, they, I feel like they lose touch of themselves because they're so scared to be one with their bodies and their minds and kind of figure themselves out.
Yeah. And then to tie it back into health, do you have a healthy body image? Are you truly seeing yourself for who you are? And if you aren't feeling good about the skin you're living in, you know, ask yourself why. Where are you getting these messages? Is it from society, culture, family, media? I mean, there are so many things constantly, especially being like in the new year, it's like we're being bombarded with different ways of like, change your body into this shape, and then you'll be happy. And it's like, you can have happiness right now. You don't have to wait until you lose however many pounds. You can fit into this size dress, or you can, you know, run a 10K. Like, you deserve and can be happy right now, or at least find peace in your body.
I love that so much. I couldn't agree more. I've been watching way too much Sex and the City now in my 30s, think, because it like resonates with me more. Like, I watched it as a kid, and now I've, in the pandemic, you know, we have a lot of time on our hands, so I've been binge watching all these things, and so many more episodes are resonating, and I'm like, oh my god, like, this was 20 years ago and it's literally my life. Like, this happened, or a version of this has happened. And I was recording a podcast earlier, and we were talking about how in eating different foods changes the taste of your like of your cum, and that episode where Samantha makes the guy take like wheatgrass shots and pineapple, and it made me want to ask you, like, why do men care so much about the size and getting it right? And it's such like a stigma. I think there's a stigma on both sides, right? Like, no one's really comfortable in their bodies. Men are always concerned with like size, and women are always concerned with also like, you know, how their privates appear. And like, I feel like that holds people back from embracing their bodies.
Maybe the first time they had any kind of sex education was when they were in middle school. They're definitely not showing you real pictures of genitals in those classes, always some kind of cartoon version. And I mean, we can't even see women's nipples. So we're definitely not going to be seeing any kind of genital depictions in popular media, television, movies, unless we're like, maybe like even like shows like Game of Thrones, we're not getting long glimpses at someone's penis or someone's vulva, you know, so it's just not seen. And if you do happen to venture into pornography, you're seeing a really specifically curated look. So obviously pornography, they have much larger penises than the average selection of penis owners. And also the vulvas are
penis owners. It's like they sign a lease.
Yeah. And then like, you know, the people who have the vulvas, it's like, you know, shaved, hairless, very like, you know, small labia. And so I don't think it's normal, or I don't think people think that they're normal because their physical presentation looks different than what they're seeing. And I think it would be so empowering. And I've done classes on this too before, to show different depictions of genitals and say, this one here is normal. Or just maybe do a side by side, like, look at this one, look at this one, what do you think? And be like, both those are normal. These are normal. And just show the variation, because no, people don't want to stand out. Like, people want to be different, and that, you know, makes them self-conscious. So I think if people know that their bodies are normal, it can help alleviate some of that like nervousness or pressure or insecurity that they find when they're either looking at themselves or about to like, you know, have an experience with a partner.
And like, a lot of times, because they're so self-conscious, they can't like get to that level of pleasure because they're so in their minds and in their heads and like self-conscious about their bodies.
Yeah, you can really get stuck, which is sad, because I mean, you can't have a really fulfilling experience if you're feeling self-conscious. So if we can liberate that, oh, sky is the limit.
K, Can you explain micro cheating and why it could be good in a relationship?
I remember when I was first quoted for an article about this. So this is the idea of, let's say we're in a relationship and we're at the dinner and I kind of flirt with the server and it's like, hey, why are you flirting with the server? You know, and that could be considered a micro cheat. Or maybe I'm liking different photos on Instagram of, you know, women. You're like, why are you liking those photos? And I'm like, because they're hot. So those instances where a little bit of jealousy kind of comes up in our chest and we're like, ooh, I don't like that. That is great to show you, okay, here were some things, like red flags are coming up for me. Let's try to look back and say, why are those things coming up for me? But also it can add a little bit of fun tension in a relationship too. So again, not knowing everyone's, you know, agreements in the relationships, it can be a contentious point where someone really does feel slighted or offended or doesn't like their partner, you know, maybe just commenting on the servers, like, I like your glasses. Why would you say that? So that in that instance, it's not really awesome. But for some who are more flexible, I guess, in their relationship, it can be a fun little like, oh, you're going to talk. Yeah. Like you're going to talk to the server like that. I'm going to punish you when we get home. Oh, you are. Oh, geez. You know, so it really depends on the spin you put on micro cheating.
I love that. I never heard that term until I was like following you and looking through your stuff. So I wanted a debrief on it. What do you think about aphrodisiac foods? Like, do you think it actually works?
Yes and no. I feel like every February someone's hitting me up for like, let's talk about aphrodisiacs. So there have been no studies that say like, if you eat oysters with chocolate covered strawberries and, you know, dark hot chocolate drinks and with spicy chilies on it, like you're going to be instantly turned on. So I think the definition of a legit aphrodisiac is something that you take that will elicit sexual response. There's no pill, no bean, no magical cheese that you can be like, oh, I want it now. Cause that would be really like, I don't know, disruptive in society. Can you imagine if they're handing out those samples at Costco? Oh my gosh. But that being said, there's nothing wrong with taking these aphrodisiac-like foods and making them part of a special night. So, you know, me eating strawberries in a salad in the summertime, that's awesome. But if I'm eating chocolate-dipped strawberries with my partner, that's a different feeling. So it's all in context. So are they the instant fix-all? No. Can they contribute to, you know, a really arousing time? Absolutely.
I love it. I always wanted to know that myth. What is important to explain when talking about sex to young people? Because I feel like growing up, we were taught how to not get pregnant, how to not get a sexually transmitted disease. And that was basically it.
Yeah. So definitely like reproductive health as opposed to sex education. I mean, shout it from the rooftops for all the young people. You deserve to have pleasure on your terms. And consent is key. I really think we're lacking, I mean, we're getting better, but still, moreover, we're lacking in the education around consent and pleasure and orientation and feelings and sex toys and non-heteronormative sex-like lifestyles. Like we're missing a large population here, especially with people feeling more empowered to embrace their, you know, diversity and their feelings. The old, you know, how not to get pregnant, here's how a baby is made. We watched some grainy 1980s video of a baby being born. That's not helpful for anyone.
No, and it's not even helpful for the opposite. Like, I think it's interesting how now that I'm in my 30s, a lot of my friends are having children. And they're like, you know, it could be really helpful if like they actually taught about your ovulation cycles and like how you can get pregnant and things like that. Because then we get into our 30s and we're just like, oh, okay, we're going to have unprotected sex. And then boom, we're going to have a baby.
Yeah, it's like, no, only certain and, like, times.
Yeah. And like, even then sometimes it doesn't work. So like, I feel like there's like such a gap in what we're taught.
Yeah. It's like, you know, the priorities are, I mean, it's like with arts getting cut in schools too. What are the first things to go, you know? And I love reading, writing, science, mathematics, all these things, but these things like sexuality and the arts, but especially sexuality education is crucial. They are crucial information pathways we need to be opening up to the youth and giving them access to the honest, factual, medical-based information, not fear-based, not shame-based, none of this weird bias stuff, but just give them the facts. Give them the facts, empower them and let them make their own empowered decisions.
Absolutely. But we didn't even have this. Like, think about it. Like, I'm pretty sure when I was in middle school, I still had AOL dial-up.
Oh yeah, me too.
And like, I remember Ask Jeeves, but you're not gonna be like, Ask Jeeves, like, you know, what is a but I feel like now kids definitely have a lot more access to things at their fingertips that we didn't have before, which is amazing. But I still think that there's more that needs to be done.
It needs to be put into the school systems. I mean, that was me. I was the friend people would come to because I would be reading all these puberty books. And then it was like YM magazine and Cosmo and Jump and all these magazines that had like, you know, racy articles. But just like, there's a thirst for knowledge here. And young people are going to get it wherever. So why not give them access to the good information instead of them learning, fumbling about from television, movies, or pornography? You know, pornography is great as entertainment. It's fiction. It's their actors doing acts, and not everything you see in those videos is what happens in real life. And so that's where a disconnect comes in. So I'm not mad at porn.
Or physically possible sometimes. You're like, how? Like, where is your leg right now that is possible?
That's why they're the professionals.
We'll leave that to them. What's like a really important thing that you've come across when talking to young people about sex? Like, what is one thing that you try to really push or see a lack in the discussion besides like pleasure and consent and just like knowing your body? Is there like another thing that you think that's missing in educating people about their bodies and sex?
I think there's not a lot of conversation around the use of toys. And this isn't just, you know, some kind of like salacious, like, look at this giant dildo I have, but the benefit that they can bring. So maybe you are someone who has limited mobility and you can't readily access your genitals. There are so many great toys that can help facilitate, you know, sexual pleasure. Or maybe you're a person of size and you see these things in, you know, a TV show or porn, and you're like, how could I do that? But there are things like harnesses and holders and swings that you could use to help facilitate better sexual experiences. So there's just a wide range of things and sex products that I don't think are put out to the masses well. I know there's a lot of like home parties and there's a lot of like Instagram ads for, you know, random sex.
I was just gonna say I'm all Instagrammed ad by all the things, and I've purchased one and I highly, highly recommend it. It's called the Puff.
Oh. Well, yeah. So now going on to social media, you can find people who literally all they do is just review sex toys, and you don't have to break the bank either. So I think it's, you know, a misnomer of like, you have to go in some sketchy dark alley and go into some, you know, icky door where it's like, hey, is this where the sex toys are? Like,
yeah. And there's always like that like really weird like room where they like would jerk off. Like, I remember like those places and I'm like, thank you, Jimmy Jan and Adam and Eve and all these websites that even sent it in like conspicuous boxes.
Yeah, I mean, discreet. I mean, it's so improved, like vastly improved, yeah, inconspicuous. But having the online experience where you can shop in your underwear is super great. And also getting to see the honest reviews and knowing that there's different price points to entry for sex toys. You don't have to, you know, spend $250 on a vibrator to have a quality toy that's going to last. I mean, there are many that are like disposable. I mean, I don't advocate for disposable toys, but they're out there. So if you try and you hate it, you're not in for like $250.
Absolutely. I think the Puff is like $35. And I definitely have more expensive ones, but highly, very happy with my $35 purchase. And I think I lost the charger. And they sell the charger separately for $5. And it's like next day shipping. I was like, done, Puff. Like, great. How would you recommend couples or not even anyone to introduce toys into the relationship or into the bedroom?
I love using like a third party entryway. So that's either saying like, I listened to a podcast, or you could say I read this article somewhere and they were talking about blank. And then you can say, would you ever consider trying that? And then your partner could either be like, oh, never. And then you're like, cool, me either. Or they'll be like, yeah, I might be into that. And you can say, okay, cool. That way it takes the pressure off of them to respond a certain way. And they're not feeling like they're directly hurting your feelings because they're hurting the podcast feelings or the article's feelings. Like, I would never try that toy. And you're like, oh, cool.
I love it. What is master dating?
Master dating. This is where you have a little masturbation session before your date.
Ooh, to kind of like in when what's it called? What about Mary? Something about Mary.
This thing over, yeah, absolutely.
Because it like relieves your stress, or
it relieves your stress. It can give you a nice happy afterglow. Like you can just calm you down. I'm not going to ascribe to like, you don't go out with a full a loaded gun, but it can help. It can help. So consider doing that if you're feeling nervous. You know, give yourself a little bit of relief and release the tension. Get a, you know, a sex glow, and then go out.
So I'm sure you're up to date with pop culture, but like, I have a serious obsession with A-Rod and J-Lo. I just love them. Like, she can do no wrong in my book. The woman glows. And there's like cheating scandals right currently. And supposedly they're in an open relationship. What are your thoughts on open relationships? Do you think that they can work? Do you think that it's like a long-term viable option for relationships?
Yes. Yes, they can work. I've been in open relationships before. It's just all about communication. I think a lot of times because society is so based in, you know, monogamy, that anytime someone branches out into a different kind of relationship, it's like, oh, why would you do that? That's never going to work. But let's look at divorce rates.
Right. Like monogamy is great and everybody cheats. Okay.
Yeah. So I don't know J-Lo and A-Rod. I don't know the relationship, but
I don't either, but I'm very affected by it. I'm just kidding.
So we don't know all the intricacies of what they're it, one, are they in an open relationship? And if they are, what are their agreements that go into that? So, I mean, there are so many nuanced conversations that have to happen about, you know, who can we date? What are our safety protocols we're doing if we're going to be intimate with someone else? Like there's a whole host of things. So what I like that I think the monogamy community can do is look at our non-monogamous community and look at their communication style. They're talking about sex and all these different things much more that I find than monogamous people. It's really, really great because there's no like anxious feeling of like, oh, I got to talk to someone about this, but I don't know how to say it. You have to have these conversations in open relationships because if you're going to add another person, that's not going to be less difficult to manage. So you have to have communication in the relationship.
Do you have advice to give people to have a better sex life? Like, what are your top suggestions for someone who's just trying to get into their comfort zone and into their own skin in sexually?
First, permission. You get to have pleasure. This is your right. You know, you deserve to have pleasure, even if you are still working on your body image or you're working through, you know, maybe difficult situations at home and we're still living through a pandemic. So no matter what's going on or how you feel about yourself, know that you deserve to have pleasure on your own terms. Get in touch with your body, you know, find gratitude in the place where you are now. Maybe you're not like, I love my body. That's okay. That's great. I want to be in the toxic, you know, body love culture, which is great. But also some people are just like, it's not happening. I don't like it. You know, try to reframe it as I'm grateful to still be here. I have a journey ahead of me, but right now I'm not going to like attempt to hate myself into happiness because it doesn't work. So if we come from a place of like just gratitude and say, okay, I'm here today. I'm mindful of this. This is going to be forever. Things will change. I think just shifting that negativeness into a place of like neutral or just like baseline is going to be really helpful to like unlock someone's like hangups around like, I hate my body. I don't even want to do anything with my body. I don't want to touch my body. I don't want to share my body. Like, so I think if we can heal the relationship we have with ourselves, that's number two. two. And touch yourself, number three, touch yourself. Know that you can give yourself amazing, awesome sexual pleasure without having a partner in place. It's not required. Go seek out toys, try different things. You know, you have the right to do that. It's not wrong. It's not cheating. You're not someone who can't get sex otherwise. What does get sex even mean? But like, you're not a loser if you have to use a sex toy. I mean, I love using sex toys. Even doing partnered sex, boom, pull it out. Yeah. And so just know that if what you're into doesn't, you know, isn't being seen in normal life or you're not seeing it in pop culture or popular movies, that's okay. As long as it's consensual. I'm not talking about like, you know, fringe things that, you know, delve into the predatory criminal world. But if it's consensual, you like it, that's great. So be, I guess, honest in what you are into. That was four. How many do you want?
No, that was perfect. If you want to share more, go for it. But
that's top four.
Okay, perfect. Are there any new projects that you're working on that you want to share with the audience?
Yes, I wrote a book. It was very challenging during a pandemic, but it's called Playing Without a Partner, A Single's Guide to Sex, Dating, and Happiness. And it's basically my life story of just how to lead a happy, fulfilled life as a single person. So whether you are still long-term single or you're newly single, like, it's just a book to help you feel good about where you're at right now. So we're definitely talking about body image, definitely talking about seeking out sexual pleasure from within yourself, talking about how to be grateful and mindful and how to just really relish this time and feel empowered so that if you want to meet someone or when you do meet someone, you're coming to them as this really whole, awesome person. And then at the end, we talk about like meeting strangers in the wild and how to, you know, navigate that, how to talk about our STI statuses, how to share, you know, have intimate conversations with strangers. So really empowering people to just, I think, just be the best version they can be.
Absolutely. I love that so much. It's really interesting. I'm going to read this book because I actually just deleted all of my dating apps.
Oh, okay.
I decided that like Bumble and Hinge was just toxic and it was just not bringing the right happiness and joy that it should. So like, I'm trying to embrace meeting people in a pandemic somehow else that's not on an app. So we'll see. Where can people find you? How do they purchase the book? How do they follow you on social? All the things.
You can find me at sexologistmegan.com and I'm at sexologistmegan on all the social media channels. If you Google Playing Without a Partner and Simon & Schuster, the website should pop up. And it's available now for pre-order wherever books are sold.
Amazing. I'm definitely purchasing this book because I need it. Thank you so, so much for doing this podcast today. I really, really appreciate it. I learned so much and thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. This was a joyful conversation.
Thank you guys all for listening. Remember to follow me at Health Chef Julia. Remember to follow the podcast, and thank you so much.